Well, for people who live in poverty, it's really hard to adapt to situations like that. I mean, they're finding it hard to find their daily meal. And when there's floods, when there's cyclones and heat waves, I mean, their whole lifestyles deteriorate. Their health, their sanitation, and ultimately leading to death. Rising population also has a parallel which goes with it, which is urbanization. It is projected that by 2030, 60% of the world's population is going to live in cities. Right now, in South Asia, 400 million people live in South Asian cities. And we have three of the most populated countries, which is Bangladesh, Pakistan, and India, in South Asia. When urbanization grows, and so grows the urban poor, at least 50% of the people in metropolitan areas are urban poor. And these metropolitan areas, though it has developed, we are also trying to, you know, run this race of development which the whole world is also running. And because of that, infrastructure and buildings are not planned and they are not maintained. And they are highly vulnerable to coastal erosions, to floods, and causes a lot of damage and economic problems. So I've explained to you why South Asia is vulnerable. Why, when a North American emits carbon dioxide, that the result of it is 10 times or even 100 times worse for a person in South Asia. And now I'll just going to show through certain pictures on what's actually happening there. Floods. There were two cyclones which hit Bangladesh. And it made so many people refugees. And as you say, the picture describes a lot. The flood that hit India left 2.5 million people displaced. Some of this information is hard to get, so I grabbed all the things that I can. It's not just the floods. We also have times that there is no rain at all. In Pakistan saw the biggest drought in 1999. This area, which is called the Thar Desert, receives about 300 millimeters of rainfall. But this season, they only received 20% of that. Sri Lanka has been facing a lot of droughts during the past 6 years in areas like Anuradhapura, Polonnaruwa, Kurunagala. These are all agricultural areas which is quite rural. And the people are finding it really hard to cope up with it. This is a heat wave that hit India in 2003, killing 3,000 people. These are not children who are dead. These are children who are worshipping their God to ask for rain during that time. I didn't find pictures of dead people, and I don't like pictures of dead people much. So, glacial melting is also a huge problem to many countries like Nepal and Bhutan. Here you see that the Himalayas is currently, the glacial melting is currently happening at 50 feet per year, and that's a huge amount. And the average glacial retreat in Bhutan is about 100 to 130 feet per year. This is causing what we call glacial lake outburst floods, GLOF, glacial lake outburst floods. And this is an outburst flood which happened in Nepal. And also Lake Thorthomi in Bhutan is supposed to be melting at 30 to 35 meters per year and faces the risk of bursting. I will explain to you later on how these climate catastrophes impact certain areas of the lives of the people there. The rise of the sea level causes many coastal impacts. It is projected by IPCC that by the end of this century, the sea will rise by 0.4 meters. And if you look at the statistics, Bangladesh is in a bad situation by 2050, and so is Maldives, because both are quite low-lying islands, areas. This is an island in Bangladesh, which is called Kutubdia. This was once a 250 square kilometer island. Now, it's just 37 square kilometers. The sea has coming into the land about 15 kilometers. Maldives, I might say, is the most vulnerable when it comes to coastal erosion, because 80% of Maldivian land is just 1 meter above the sea level. And most of Maldivian infrastructure and buildings lie about 100 meters away from the coast. And I would say this is a very vulnerable country. And some people say that in about 100 years, there might be no Maldives. Because of all these climate events, certain areas of our life in South Asia is affected. Firstly, the agricultural sector. This is the bread and butter of the people in South Asia, and it's our food security. It's projected that by mid-21st century, 30% of the crops might decrease. Here are the main causes which impact the agriculture in Sri Lanka. It's mainly floods, cyclones, and the salinization of water. It's where the coast, the sea water comes in and gets mixed up with the land water. And here you see in Pakistan a salinization that happened in the Sindh area, where the sea has come in and the salt, this is salt that you see, which is a bit white, has mixed up with the earth, and the earth is being not productive at all. So human beings are also affected in a huge way, especially the different health issues which are caused: diarrhea, malaria, and heat stroke. This happens because when there are heavy rains and flooding happens, this water gets contaminated with animal waste and with human waste, and it becomes a conducive for the transmission of various diseases, especially diseases like diarrhea, which is caused through water. And it also becomes a breeding ground, because the water is stagnated for insects, which for mosquitoes basically, which cause the threat of malaria. It's not just the humans which are affected. All biodiversity is affected, as this gentleman just told me earlier. South Asia has about 16% of floral and 12% of faunal species which are not found anywhere else, which are unique to South Asia. In 2001, it was projected that 10 to 30% of these species are going to be extinct, are under threat of extinction. Today, in 2009, stepping on 2010, these species might be lost, might be extinct by now. This is the Sundarban mangrove forest in Bangladesh, and the different species lying in this mangrove forest. 1 meter rise of the sea level could make this mangrove forest disappear, and with that, its biodiversity. This you see the Sagarmatha National Park in Nepal. It lies near the foot of the Himalayas, and it is impacted and is in threat of glacial lake outburst flooding. And this rare species that you see here, the snow leopard, is an endangered species in this area, which is facing threat because of this epidemic. Sri Lanka and Maldives are quite popular for their corals. There are so many tourists coming in, there are people who are admiring its corals. But because of the rise in temperature in the sea, Maldives, basically many Maldive corals, are facing mass bleaching. And the regeneration capacity of the reefs are decreasing. So maybe in about 50 years there have been no reefs for people to go and see. And the species which are lying or residing inside the corals are also reducing year by year. Some statistics. The highest percentage of threatened plants is reported in Sri Lanka, threatened birds in Bangladesh, threatened mammals in India. Well, now you have a clear idea of what's happening in South Asia. That global warming is real, and it's affecting in a big way. So we need to find solutions to it. There are certain solutions put forward. Before that, I would just like to read out this comment, this statement by Nicholas Stern again. This is based on the principles of discounting. As anyone who did economics, you might know what discounting principle is. Reducing global emissions by 2 to 3% a year for the next 50 years will only cost 1% of global GDP. If not, future adaptation and mitigation could be 20% or higher of GDP for future generations. Basically, in a nutshell, what Stern is saying is that we need to act now because things will be really worse in the future. There are certain strategies, certain solutions which are proposed in a global scale, which I'm going to show up in the board. Some of these are quite confusing to explain, but I'll try my best to do it. The first three are mainly different mechanisms which are based on the principles of economics, of the carbon credit market. Well, if you take emission trading, I'll try to explain to you in this way. Let's assume there are two countries which are given an emission limit, a limit that they can emit carbon dioxide. But both countries, let's assume that both countries have exceeded that limit and need to abate CO2, cut down on the CO2 limit. But country A has to incur a higher cost to abate this carbon dioxide, but country B can abate it in a cheaper way. So how this market happens is that country B will abate more carbon dioxide than is required and gain carbon credit for that, and sell those carbon credits at the carbon credit price of the market to country A. So country B gains that profit by selling that, and country A doesn't have to incur a big cost to abate that carbon dioxide to stick to those regulations. That's basically emission trading. The next two, JI and CDM, well, these are basically another option that is given to these countries. If you take the same scenario, country A can invest in a project that is carried out in country B, which will help them abate carbon dioxide. And there is regulatory authority, and through that, they can gain carbon credits. So these are the gains and the incentives that people have who are in the carbon credit market to abate their carbon dioxide. There are also some technological solutions which are proposed and put forward. We call it technological fixes. Energy efficiency and conservation strategies, where we try to increase the miles a car travels on a gallon, and also conservative techniques such as conservative building codes, fuel shifts from coal to gas, carbon dioxide capturing and storage mechanisms, basically capturing storage carbon at coal-based power plants and storing it underground, nuclear energy, and something which we all know is renewable energy and biostorage. So take biofuel, solar energy, hydropower, geothermal, and wind power. I just got the statistics that 1% of the electricity in the world is generated through wind power, and is projected to increase to 30% in the future, which is a good thing. And carbon sequestration comes under biostorage. So carbon sequestration is where carbon sinks, absorbs the carbon dioxide in the atmosphere and stores them. So the best method here is trees, planting trees. In Sri Lanka, the rubber tree is supposed to be a quite good carbon sequestration plant. I'm sure people who are forestry and environment might be knowing much more than me on this topic. So these are all strategies that are put forward to mitigate. Mitigate means that we try to reduce the impact for people who will face this about 50 years from now, our next generation. But another area is adaptation, because our fathers, our grandfathers have also emitted carbon dioxide, and people in this generation is facing the impacts of that. So adaptation is also an important part. So things like building sea defenses, storm surge barriers, water storage and conservation techniques. If you followed Copenhagen, you would have been, you would know that there's 10 billion fund, which was put forward for adaptation for these climatic events in many countries. So that's also something good. But the fact is, even though most of these things have been proposed, and some of these things have been tried out, there hasn't been much significant difference. Carbon dioxide emissions are increasing. The warmth is increasing. I'm just wondering what's happening. So let's try to look at this from a different angle. Let's try to see what the Bible says about this and what are its implications. God the Creator and human beings the steward. I would not explain this because of the time factor that we have. Not quite sure how much time I've taken, but I won't explain the theological thing, but I will explain you the implications of it. Being a steward entails that we take care of the creation for the benefit of all mankind. So I'm just wondering if this kind of attitude is seen in the multilateral discussions that happen on climate change. It seems that the overriding agenda of most nations is to somehow get out of the talks by bearing the least amount of change and bearing the least amount of concessions. I mean, who's thinking about the environment? And it's also a fact that most rich countries take in their lobbyists, take in their lawyers to somehow influence of the final outcome so that it will have loopholes to somehow creep through. Or it won't have any binding agreements for the countries which pollute the most. These lobbyists and lawyers might be Christians. Sadly, they themselves don't know that their country is using their skill for something which is going against God's will. Finally, at the end of these discussions, it's just time wasted, money spent, and a lot of carbon fossils burnt for nothing, for no result. Secondly, you agree with me if I say that the world is biased towards the rich and powerful. I will give you an example from the emission trading market itself. So, emission trading happens in this way, where all the countries are given carbon permits in the start, free set of carbon permits, which are given based on their previous emissions, a system called grandfathering. So, at the end of the day, from the beginning itself, the highest polluters get a high amount of carbon permits. And these guys are also the most powerful people in the country, in the world. And it doesn't end there. If these countries want to emit more carbon dioxide, they can use the carbon market to buy carbon credits from other lesser industrialized countries which do not emit to their level, who do not emit to their quota. So, you might think that us in the global south, because of this trading system, has an advantage. Because we can sell them carbon credits, and we can get donations and different investments from them. But the problem is, the politics of international aid limits our bargaining power. Further, it's the countries that ultimately give the most powerful countries carbon credits that face the bigger impacts of global warming, of their emissions, for the reasons that I explained to you before. Okay. Robert White, a theologian, explains that we live on a planet of finite size and resources. What I do in my own backyard has a global impact. Yet those who suffer most from the consequences of climate change had no say in my contributing activities. Well, Jesus summed up the commandments to loving God and loving your neighbor. Sacrificial love challenges our lifestyles. It challenges those things that we take for granted. It calls us to limit some of our choices so that people in the world, the humanity itself, can continue and live. God's model should be motivating us to expose the hypocrisy and the exploitative nature of systems like the emission trading system. Ron Sider, in a book that he wrote about 30 years back called Rich Christians in an Age of Hunger, he explains about how different economies are unjust. But now, apart from hunger, we have climate change, which is causing havoc in countries, floods, cyclones, whatnot. But it's true that even developed countries are facing these catastrophes. But the thing is, the developed countries, the people who live there, can get back on their feet quite fast. But developing countries cannot. It also can be that the developed countries might boost the economic system of something like this. Another area that we forget is that we have the responsibility to ensure that we leave a decent environment for our future generations. If we don't, we are causing intergenerational injustice in these terms. Next, we should look at the next biblical perspective. We have been talking about idolatry during the past days. And if you think back on the different suggestions that were made for mitigation and adaptation, you would realize that the first three were mainly on different market mechanisms. You have incentives, you have gains, you buy and sell, and we try to save the earth through that. Next, we rely on technology fixes. Different technology fixes which we would think that would give salvation to this earth. But in this process, we are trying to make gods out of the market, gods out of technology. Michael Northcott states about something about the market. Truth runs counter to the core assumption of neoliberalism that unrestrained economic growth, deregulated trade in goods, and deregulated money markets are redemptive devices that make the world a better place. Isn't that what most market people talk about? Well, I would explain to you, give an example of how this fails, how God of the market fails. Clean development mechanisms, CDM, are ways that are proposed for industrialized countries to somehow maintain to their carbon emission level, and also through that to develop the developing countries as well. But there are some parties which exploit this, and in that process we lose the whole rationale behind it. In Brazil, there are many savanna forests, and these savanna forests is a means of livelihood for the people around it. That's where they go to gather their firewood, and they are quite linked and quite close to the environment. And as you know, savanna forests are quite precious to the environment as well. But a project called Planta, which is funded by Canada, cut off all these old growth forests, the savanna forests, and planted eucalyptus trees. This resulted in havoc. And there were so many indigenous people who had to leave. They lost their jobs. So you must be thinking why this happened. It happened for the sole reason of the way we think, as the market way of thinking. Because old growth forests doesn't let you gain carbon credit. It doesn't apply for that. But eucalyptus trees, which are known as a carbon sink, you can get carbon credits for that. So when you think in the market way of thinking, it's all buy and sell. Everything's a commodity. You just cut down the forest, plant eucalyptus trees. And something I read that is that for eucalyptus trees to become a good carbon sink, it takes so many years. So this is the market way of thinking. Can it save the world? Next, technology. Again, Northcott says that technology maintains the illusions that humanity is in control of the planet and of its own history, and that there are no biological or climatological limits to the aspirations of industrial humans for speed and wealth. Most of these technological fixes demand a huge load of resources and have to incur huge costs. Countries in South Asia cannot bear this cost, and we don't have those resources. It's also a fact that the negative impacts of technology is never revealed. It's hidden. But the biggest problem is, technological fixes encourage us to go on as business as usual and forget that there's a bigger problem behind it. Both these elements of market and technology encourages us to do that. It makes us neglect the bigger moral problem behind global warming, and we try to manipulate the climate to suit our needs without limiting our lifestyles, without limiting our needs. Let's move on to the next. The Sabbath. Well, I'm sure you must have listened to many environmentalists talking on the Sabbath and how it's relevant, so I won't repeat it. It talks a lot about limitations on ourselves. Well, this 24-hour, 7-day life that we live is not only bad for our health, it also affects the people around us. It affects the environment. And isn't it so hard for us to limit our spending on one day? It's really hard for us to limit our traveling on a day. We have come to that position that we really can't limit ourselves. In Sri Lanka, there is a season for fruits. There is a season for mangoes. There's a season for pineapples. Well, recently, I've seen these fruits, all these fruits, on the top of shelves of supermarkets for the entire year. I'm sure it's the same in US. Well, to come to think of it, is this loss of season a good thing? Do we know how that impacts the environment? Do we know how it impacts the rest of the world? Well, God is sustaining the environment in a certain natural cycle. And when we try to exploit it, resources become scarce. But then again, that's where economics starts, scarce resources. So, and you looking back on, it's just not the environment. Human beings are affected by this. Human beings have become people who want things at the time they want, the amount they want. They're becoming impatient. Transformed to become people who want things instantly. And that's also very dangerous for missionaries, because they also expect instant reactions, instant replies by the people that they disciple. But human beings are transformed to that because of this speedy generation that is coming up. Well, Dennis, the speaker yesterday, also said that we need time to take good decisions. And it's not speedy decision that we should take for the betterment of the environment and people. Well, I would also like to quote Dennis. Another thing that she said was that none of us can serve the earth. Only God, who is the creator, sustainer, and redeemer of all creation, can do that. However, as Christians, we can join him in that good work. We as Christians should be calling out the nations, should be calling out the corporations, to admit that what they are doing is impacting the global environment. It's only then, when they take up the responsibility, that we can come to a just solution. There are all these parties who are pointing fingers to each other, passing the buck. If you look at Copenhagen, there's US pointing fingers at China, China pointing fingers at India. So all looking, so who will take the first step? I mean, there will be no solution at the end of the day. Again, to come to the question, who's thinking about the environment? Who's actually thinking about the environment? Well, as you understand, this is not a simple matter. It's quite complex. I don't have the answers to questions that even I come up with. I might not know on how to give you answers on how you should respond here in your context, because my context is different. But maybe if we get together, we can come up with solutions that might work, that might be practical enough. So whatever solutions that we come up with, I feel they should be honest, they should be sacrificial, and they should be holistic. I've just put down some questions on our areas of lifestyle, our integrated discipleship and advocacy. Maybe you can just write down for you guys to think about. Maybe it'll challenge you. I'll just keep it on the screen so if someone's writing, you can write down. How has my current lifestyle contributed to global warming and exploitation of people in other less developed countries? What changes, sacrifices should I make? Attitudes and perceptions of mine do I need to repent of? Next, integrated discipleship. Sometimes we try to segregate our lives, we try to compartmentalize, but God calls us to integrate our whole life, our whole discipleship, mainly thinking about areas like this. So how is my concern for the environment reflected in my choice of work, study, or research? What are the hypocritical practices in my area of WSR that has contributed negatively to this problem? How will I use my work, study, or research to contribute positively in helping change these practices? And lastly, advocacy. What are the things that I can do to keep myself informed of all sides of the issues? Came for this talk, you have already done one. How can I develop a bottom-up approach to seeing the problem? To explain that as both as individuals and also through motivating a small community. Maybe at college. Lastly, how can I raise the voice of the voiceless in this area? I would also like to recommend this book. It's called A Moral Climate Change by a guy called Michael Northcott. He's an ethics professor in University of Edinburgh in Scotland. This gives a very different take to all the books that I've read on climate change. It talks about the bigger problem behind it. And as a South Asian, I would say that it's very aligned to what I think. Yes? Okay. A Moral Climate Change. Moral Climate Change. Michael S. Northcott. I'm sorry, it's not available in the IVP press here in States. I just checked yesterday. But if you can order it online. So I would like to conclude by pointing out that global warming is not an intellectual discussion for people in South Asia. It's not something that we sit around tables and discuss, should we respond, or is it happening? It's not something like that. It's a life and death situation. So I would like to end with this quote from Michael Northcott from the book Moral Climate Change. The needs of the weak set the standards for the requirements of love and not the capabilities of the strong. I'll repeat that. It's the needs of the weak that set the standards for the requirements of love and not the capabilities of the strong. God continue to challenge you and also equip you in all ways to respond to this crisis in ways that are pleasing to Him. Shall we just pray for 1 minute? Will you all pray? Dear God, we thank you for making us stewards of this creation, for giving us such a responsibility. And we repent of the fact that we have not been proper stewards, God. And we ask your help to change our lifestyles to be according to that, to integrate our discipleship, and to be advocates of this in the future. Thank you for your words. Amen.
Whoa.
Oh, sorry. Thank you. Have we finished our time? Do we have time?
Yes, it's 5:06. We have time for...
Okay. So maybe we can think about the questions that are given, and maybe you can just get into groups of three or something, because it's just a few people, and just take on one area and think about it, and we can discuss the lifestyle, integrated discipleship, and advocacy. So we have about, it's 5 to 6, is that so? Sorry, is that six?
Five.
6 minutes to 5?
5:06.
We have about half an hour. Okay, cool. I thought I ran out of time. If you can get into groups of three or something, then we can discuss it. We'll discuss in groups for about 10 minutes on these three areas, and then we'll get together, make a circle and discuss. Okay, maybe we can all get together in this circle. And sorry to make you stand up and come here. And with the positives of having a small audience, you can always discuss and, you know, think deeply. Oh, I'm standing. Hi. Let me meet you. I'm Sachin. You know my name.
Yeah, Nick.
I'm used to saying that to everybody. Yeah. I'm sorry.
That's a good idea here.
Hi. So, I'm sorry, I have to record this, so I'll be talking like this. So, on lifestyle, what are your views?
There's so much that begins with being super intentional.
Mm-hmm.
If you take it all at once, it will be confusing and you'll be frustrated. But I'm through the past year of being super frustrated because you're trying to do things and it just doesn't work that way.
Okay.
So the intention comes in with, I mean, learning how to things like bike care. That's so I make hats and crochet and knit. Teaches other people. Imagine making gifts for people of like that kind of stuff, and that's what I've done and changed.
Okay, that's good. Any other sponsor share?
Sure.
Yes. Yes.
Take a walk instead of taking a car. I mean, I've heard that plenty of times before, and I, you know, we're so used to like, oh, it's going to go fast now. Another appointment here and there.
Yes.
And you can really just slow down and take it easy and have time.
Okay.
So much more.
Yes. Northcott also talks on his, on a passage of the generation of speed, the instantiality, when it comes to even SMSs. It's always instant. And I guess it's making us people who can't wait, quite impatient. I'm quite noticed because we're all in the same generation. Yep. So good, thanks.
And it takes about 5 minutes to warm up when you get back in the house. But actually, you know, that's like 8 hours every day.
Yes. I've heard that, I mean, extra air conditioning, like extra heating. Because when I came here, I didn't put that option because I know it's very cold here. But when I came, in my hotel room where I stay, I actually don't put the heat on. And I come from a country which is about 26 degrees. I actually like the cold, I guess. So, yeah, that's the way, I guess. I was having this discussion with a person in Sri Lanka who's called Vinod Ramachandra, might have heard him. Well, he was saying about carbon audits that we might actually can have, where we kind of calculate the carbon emissions that happens in our daily day-to-day activities. And so he was saying that he has to fly to different countries, and that's a lot of carbon emissions. But he justifies that by not having an AC, not having a car, and having a very low electricity bill. So maybe just the suggestions, carbon audits that we can have, where we can justify the certain choices that we make when it comes to fossil fuels. Yes. Okay. Anything else on lifestyle that you like to share?
Well, I know with me, so in my group, I've grown up my entire, like, it's really just been the last year or two that I've really gotten into this, because I've grown up, mine's very Republican, so they're very anti-going green, they're very anti to do with the environment, because they just don't believe any of it. So I've had to, like, the past year or two that I've lived on my own, I've kind of been separated from that. It's kind of been an awakening to me, and, like, God's really spoken into me that it's important and that it's something yes. that I need to be doing. So, and one of the hard things was, like, I felt overwhelmed. Like, there's yeah. so much
yes,
that I'm not
yes.
doing. So I had to learn to, like, take baby steps and to just do what I could at the time.
Yes. I guess it's the same when we're overwhelmed that there's so many people that we need to save. So many, I mean, you think that so many people go to hell if you think that angle. So, yes, baby steps. I might not know when you say Republican, but still, I know what you're saying. What else you want to share?
I think we were talking about attitudes and perceptions, the last point that you have listed. In a capitalist society, it's very easy to look at judgment, especially with capitalism where you have private property. It's kind of a norm that you can do, and a lot of times people use that in a way that they I don't remember what the quote was, maybe the actions I'm taking. And so I think that's just with a lot that, you know, it's not necessarily just my backyard or
whatnot. Yeah. Robert White, yeah. He's a theologian, yeah. Good. Okay, any others want to share about lifestyle changes?
In college, I started riding my bike to school instead of driving a car, and that was great. Emissions and whatnot. Then I moved full of potholes, so riding your bike's dangerous. taking the bus, and I got tired of it because, like, I had a pain, like, oh man, like, the was blind next to her, and I'm like, God is good. He is good. I will not let him ignore that as much as I like cling to like the good life or something that God is. So I think I've been take the bus.
Yeah, that's an area that I would like to take under advocacy or integral discipleship, which I will talk about when I get there, especially on not having lanes for bikes and mass transit being not very good, especially states. So on what he said, well, yes, it's a sad fact that even the atmosphere is taken as a commodity. And that's the whole problem when it comes to marketing, the market way of thinking. People think that we own the atmosphere and that we can sell and buy in the ways we want. It's quite sad when you think about it. These are my best friends from Urbana.
Yeah, well, after that, I have to support my best friend. after seeing this, and after the whole entire Urban experience, you have to, take lifestyle into a reflection. And when we look at our lifestyles, we drive cars, and we take trains, and we take buses, or, you know, have them as comforts or things that we need. And then, that's a good side for us. When on the other side, there are people that don't have that luxury, and they're feeling disadvantages. Like, they're having climate, as he mentioned earlier, the droughts, they're on people, they don't have, hang up in the heat, things like that. They're feeling it. And I feel like, you know, it's kind of taking something on my heart. There's something I could do, like try to change a lifestyle that I have to help them. Because truthfully, we all are God's children, believe it or not. Like, even though we're from different parts of the world, we are still children of God. So I figure that there's something I could do to help out my brother or sister in some other place. And that's a lifestyle change that I think we could do.
Thank you, Alex. Well, in this area, certain areas that I want to challenge you all was on the fact of speed, the instant charity, that the whole fact that we want things instantly. Maybe we can try to change that, try to get out of that trend that people are in. And secondly is what Ramesh Atala also spoke about living a simple lifestyle, sufficiency. Sometimes we struggle between the two areas of being, you know, sufficient and also our desires that we have. Sense we can be sufficient by certain amount of goods that we have, we try to reach for more. And maybe on the example of the fruits, it's because with that we demand it 24/7 that this has to be provided, and the supermarkets have to be open, and there should be energy used on all the light bulbs. It's because we demand it. When I landed in Chicago, I was stranded there. Well, so my cousin who lives close by, so I went with him and went a bit around Chicago to reach his home, and I saw so many buildings with all the lights on and no one working in it. So I was wondering, okay, that's points. So, yeah, and you know what God says about this whole thing about in earlier times, that when the sun rose and it went down, that was the time that people worked. And now we're in a culture where it's 24/7 because of the light bulb. And it's also a fact that the light bulb is a good thing. But on the other hand, it creates this culture of 24/7 lifestyles. It's no rest. Okay. Yes. Sure.
I was wondering, during your presentation, to ask you something about that notion of speed. Mm-hmm. Do you see ways that general thought of Sri Lanka, or maybe thought of Buddhism from Sri Lanka, mm-hmm. can contribute to our own thought processes, or maybe Christianity's thought?
Okay. Well, it's mainly the factor of Sabbath, rest, which none of us are taking. Neither do I, well, because I find it hard to rest. But this rest is needed, I guess, for, as I said, not just for us, for the environment, for everything else, and a time of reflection. And I guess it's mainly seen in Buddhists there, because they spend time meditating and actual rest that they give themselves. It's a different cause. But I guess with capitalism, which is said to start from Christianity, this whole sense of going, reaching the goal, living the American dream, am I right? So I don't think that gives us much rest, or it makes us speed up more and more. There's a book called Business Guide to Busy Christians by Tim Chester. It's again not in this, in the Ivy Press, I checked. Well, it taught me a lot, and because I was down with hepatitis for about 3 months, and I had to slow down my routine. And this book helped me a lot in showing me why we should slow down and make stop and not always move. Okay, don't have much time. So the second part, integrating a discipleship. What do you think about these areas? I'm sure you're all working in areas of environment, forestry. I think I'm the person who's left out. What do you think you can do? What are the practices that you've been doing, or corporates I've been doing, which are like, you know, philanthropy?
I see the college can practice.
Yeah.
I mean, you learn how to do it. And in that way, you will learn how to make the mistakes and, like, mm-hmm. you know, how that just kind of can get messy.
Yeah.
But in terms of the off the setup that way, to do it naturally.
Okay.
So.
Mm-hmm. Are you all involved in areas of research where, you know, maybe sustainable development or areas like that? Maybe I can encourage you to take up areas which you can think of these, not just development or sustainable development for the sake of it, but which actually, you know, when thinking about in a global scale, in a global outlook, holistically, where we can actually develop sustainably. So I've just wrote down that Dennis is the speaker yesterday, who said that certain educational paths that you might take might be different to the traditional tracks. So that hit me, so I noted it down. Well, I'm not sure how your context is. So maybe when it comes to integrating your discipleship, you try to eat and breathe. If you're passionate about the environment, you try to eat and breathe that and see how you can make things change, but not be overwhelmed by it. Use resources, use your work, your research in doing it. So, any ideas on that? Things that you've tried out, or I'm not saying you might succeed. Yes, please.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we were trying to, and so that it was not only aesthetically,
yeah.
and like, so that really, like, a life that I want to pursue and also
yes.
talk about today is mm-hmm. really important, like, for, you know, as yes. for the local art district.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. I saw that that summer was really like eye-opening, even though it wasn't like an internship, it was just an internship, but definitely.
Yes. In Sri Lanka, the Christians are blamed for what's happened to the environment. They're directly blamed because we were a colonialized country, and it's totally blamed on the people, on the West, on the white people, basically, put it blatantly. And there are groups which are ordering that the people, the British, and people who colonized, pay a certain amount for all the catastrophes that happen to Sri Lanka now. So you can't blame it, and they blame it on the Christians, because for people there, every person from America, from British, all Christians, even though they follow it or not, are Christians. So I guess what you do, it's not big things that you need to do. There's this book called Small is Beautiful. It's written by, I think he's an economist, where he talks about development, but not in big ways. It's not skyscrapers, but it's sustainable. Ideas? What about you, Edwin? Oh, who's that? He's a person who owns this, you know?
Well, I think, like, as far as discipleship goes, like, natural stuff.
Okay.
So
okay.
It's easy for me to, it's kind of, it's actually kind of hard, because it's kind of my track. It's not like I'm thinking about doing anything else and trying to think about here at Urbana. I thought about possibly going on to try to find something. I'm not really sure where I want to put my degree or where my line of work.
Okay.
You know, we talked about.
Yes.
I'm not really sure what I want to do with that.
Yeah.
But going on maybe to some type of there was absolutely no like use of forestry there. I guess a lot like me, for instance, I don't really understand this.
Yeah.
They don't know that. Very fortunate here to have education that teaches us how to do it. So like we can easily and say for myself, like, you know, there's times like just leading by example, just doing some talks over there.
Yeah,
he's only 2 hours in getting that kind of that connotation word.
Yeah.
Say we have dominion over the earth, so they're saying, oh yeah, we can do it.
Yeah.
It's Christians' fault.
That's the way.
Well, I know that we're not green. And that was pretty interesting. They put posters up all of it.
Yeah.
Well, that's really going to get, especially in environmental schools, it's really going to get people on fire, people that aren't Christians, too.
Yeah,
saying that, not saying that, like we need,
There's also the temptation of sometimes getting caught up in the project mentality, where it's projects that we do, but our lifestyles won't change. If we do a one-off project and we think we have done our job, we have done our duty. Same goes to technological fixes. That's the whole problem behind it. But I guess the lifestyle that we live, where we question each and every decision and its impacts, which is very well needed. I've bought a book which is Everyday Justice. I think that by who? I can't remember. It's that book is there, and it talks about in a very practical way how our decisions, our everyday decisions, it reflects or impacts in a great bigger deal. So yeah.
Is that the book the author just gave a seminar here?
Oh, she was here. The author was here.
Yeah. Also,
officially
the time slot.
Who would have to bribe now? Maybe we can take about 5 minutes more to discuss the last section of advocacy then. Yeah.
I got a tip that most people don't think about that could be interesting. When you go home, look at the bottom back of your refrigerator, all that dust that's clogged up in there. If you clean that out, the refrigerator uses so much less energy because it's trying to pump more through all that dust and all that junk. It's pretty kind of gross, but once it's clean, the fridge just runs super.
Yeah.
That's good.
The water filter. Same thing, the water filter, if you keep it at a place where sunlight is coming, it's less efficient. If you keep it at a place where the sunlight doesn't come and it's shady, I mean, it doesn't use that much of energy to cool. That's again something there. Just remember. Thanks for that. So, what are the ways that you think you can advocate as individuals, as groups in colleges? Maybe things that, yes. Please share.
What I do on my campus is, it's an energy, well, it used to be called energy war, but we're trying to make it more positive. Mm-hmm. So it's, they changed the name, Energy Coalition. It's inter-campus, and we work with our facilities management, so we get mm-hmm. all the updates about kilowatts per hour, mm-hmm. and we take the last 3 years, and then school compares it, the school to itself, mm-hmm. because there's so many differences in the schools. Mm-hmm. So they see what school improves yeah. the most.
Yeah.
And you advertise it on your campus, and then But there's websites that do it. Participate nationwide too.
Mm-hmm.
Greenest Campus is one of them, I think.
Oh.
Yeah. So more schools getting on that.
Mm-hmm.
I know. Walking around, so many of the people there were just completely like, oh, well, what is that? And at the same time, there's so many areas of the world where you can use that
mm-hmm.
and use environmental advocacy as a ministry.
Yeah.
Because you can go and what good is that church going to be if the forest that the people mm-hmm. are sustaining themselves on
yeah.
is going to be gone in 5 years because of that. So mm-hmm. it's sustainable development. Some campuses here that are not advocating to
it. Yeah. So just to broaden that, as we heard, as I spoke, I guess, environment, this problem of global warming is mixed with so many others, moral issues. So what I thought was maybe there'll be people who can advocate and push, I think this is a process, push your Senate in a way that it can push the next level to increase the mass transit system in this country, where you can actually then, you know, not use your own private vehicles and use mass transit. Because in Sri Lanka, mass transit is quite okay. But I thought it must be the same here, so I wrote it down, but someone told me that it's not good. So I thought maybe you can advocate. Maybe you can push through your systems so that there will be bicycle lanes, that there will be buses or trains. I heard it's very expensive as well.
The trains are more expensive than
driving. Oh. And these three questions which I put down is, like, what are the things that I can do to keep myself informed of all sides of the issue? I think it's very important to be, have you been, I don't know, just asking, did you know these things are happening in South Asia, as in that global warming is real in those areas as well? Maybe something to find out.
I think the quickest thing you can do is to change your homepage setting to something like earthmagazine.com
mm-hmm.
or a news page of environmental news.
Okay.
Or something.
And on Facebook.
Yeah. Right when you, you know, open
mm-hmm.
it up,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be right there, a news
yeah.
story.
Mm-hmm. Last question that I put is, how can I raise the voice of the voiceless in this area? So, I don't know, I got this opportunity because I was given a scholarship to come here and share these thoughts. So maybe you can take this forward, and actually to your campuses, to your friends, that this is happening. I can always give you my slides, you know what's...
I have extra paper.
You can email, yes. Sure. If you have pen drives right now, I can give it to you now. Hope you had a productive time.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.